Blog Talk Radio.
And all Football Inclusive.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of College Football Insiders Radio. I am your host, Daniel Moviano. We're brought to you by College Football Insiders and All Access Football, as well as NFLDraftBible.com. Happy to be here on the Fantasy Sports Channel talking some college football with you as we get ready for week number 9. It's been a crazy week, folks. It's been a crazy month of October. We saw number 1 Alabama go down. We saw number 1 Ohio State go down. We saw number 1 Oklahoma go down. Who will go down this week? A few undefeated teams from the BCS conferences, the automatic qualifying conferences, have big games this week, and we're going to break them all down. That includes number 1 Auburn in the BCS going at Ole Miss. That includes number 1 Oregon in the polls going to USC, as well as undefeated Missouri going to Nebraska and undefeated Michigan State going to Iowa. So a lot of big road games this week for those undefeated BCS-type teams. We will also talk a little BCS busters with our very own BCS buster, Mr. Kenny Franek, and we'll talk a little Boise State and where they belong in this mix, as well as TCU and where they should be. As always, in our round table, we have Justin Van Fulpen and Kelron Sykes. That's our super scout and our draft guru joining us with our round table, and they're going to tell us who they think is going to lose among that foursome, if maybe more than one of those teams might lose this week. They all have tough games. And as always, the Reverend Ralph Mancini closes us out talking a little Big Ten football this week, including Michigan State, Iowa, Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, Minnesota, and who he thinks will win the Big Ten. Will Michigan State, will the Spartans clinch that this week, or could Iowa open things up wide open for the conference for those top four teams, kind of having them all there with one loss, and it'll make the month of November a really interesting one in terms of who goes to the Rose Bowl, who plays in that granddaddy of them all. Does Ohio State find a way to somehow get back into the mix and win yet another Big Ten title? But before we talk about all that and before we bring Kenny on, who's on the line, I just want to talk a little bit about that top five. And, folks, we have here at College Football Insiders, if you go to NFLDraftBible.com, you can check out our rankings. We post them every week. And we do have Auburn number 1. We jumped them over Oregon, who last week, even though Oregon won. And, see, this is why people – I hate when people get into the, you know, the, oh, well, Boise shouldn't drop because, hey, what, they didn't beat the team enough. They beat a team 57-0. Well, Oregon won 60-13 against UCLA, and I still thought – Auburn deserved to go over Oregon because, to me, beating LSU at home, adding to the resume, is more impressive. I don't care what the score was. To me, that's more impressive than a victory over a mediocre UCLA team that right now doesn't look like it's going to a bowl. And when you look at the resumes, and to me, as the season goes on, that's what it should be about. It should be less about our opinion, less about who we think would win, you know, in a neutral field tomorrow, because in that case, Alabama will be number 1. I don't think they would be underdog against anybody in a neutral field. But going on the resume, looking at teams that are undefeated, you look at Auburn. They've defeated Clemson at home. They went on the road to beat Mississippi State, who's ranked now. They beat South Carolina, who's a ranked team. They beat Arkansas, who's a ranked team. And they've beaten LSU, who's a ranked team. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4 victories over teams that are currently ranked. I don't care what they were ranked when they played. To me, that shouldn't be that relevant. Is it Auburn's fault that we didn't know Mississippi State was going to be a top 25 team? Should they get punished for that because they didn't get votes that early in the season? We have learned now, with more information, with more data, we have learned now that, hey, Mississippi State may be one of the top 25 teams in the country. And that win on the road on Thursday night looks a lot better now than it did that day. And then when you look to Oregon's schedule, sure, they beat a very good Stanford team. They beat a Stanford team that's ranked and one of the better teams in the country. But beyond that, who have they defeated? UCLA, Washington State, Arizona State, New Mexico, Tennessee, Portland State. I don't think any of those teams are going bowling next year. Not only are these teams not ranked teams, I don't think these are even bowl teams. So outside of Stanford, the tougher games on Oregon's schedule are yet to come. And that begins this week with a trip to USC on Saturday. They also play Washington. They got to go to Cal. They play host to Arizona. And they go to Oregon State to close out the season in Corvallis against the rival Beavers. So I think it's safe to say that without a doubt, you know, four of the top toughest five games are still left on the table. I mean, if you want to throw Washington there, you can almost argue five of the toughest six games of the season are still left for Oregon. So, you know, let's take a step back. We still have a lot to learn about the Oregon Ducks. And don't forget, you know, they were challenged by Arizona State. Even though they blew out Tennessee in the second half, that was a game at the half. That's a mediocre Tennessee team that will not go bowling this week. So I think, you know, right now at the top of the polls, I think the BCS does have it right with the Auburn Tigers led by Cam Newton there at number one. But enough about the big boys. Let's talk a little bit about those BCS Buster schools led by the guys that play on the blue field. And I'm going to bring on Mr. BCS Buster himself, Kenny Franek, who's going to join us this week. Kenny, thanks a lot for calling in, and how's everything going there in Minnesota?
It's going good. It's starting. Winter's starting to fall upon us here. It's getting a little colder. It's about 43 degrees now, but the sun's finally shining through, so it's looking like it might turn out to be a beautiful day.
So it's getting a little, quote-unquote, chilly in Minnesota, if you will.
Yeah, I like the pun.
Yeah, it's not an NFL show, but I know Brett Favre and Chili have been Coach Childress have been much of the talk there in your city, in your state. But, Kenny, let's talk some BCS Busters here. You know, I talked about the top, Auburn. We have number one on CFI. We have Oregon number two. We have Boise number three, which is where they are in the BCS, of course, in the coaches poll and the AP poll. They have Boise ranked number two behind Oregon, but ahead of the Auburn Tigers. Looking right now at the state of these teams, where do you think Boise deserves to be ranked, Kenny?
You know, I actually agree with the BCS rankings. I do believe that number three is where they should be. I mean, there's really no doubt in my mind that Auburn and Oregon are the top two teams in the nation. You know, as good as Boise State has been, they look lackluster on Tuesday against Louisiana Tech, and that is just a lowly team. I mean, they could have easily allowed a lot more points than what they did. The turnovers were actually causing them some problems. Their defense didn't look sharp. They looked slower than they normally have been. So I don't know if everyone's just getting tired or if they're just kind of looking past the game. But, yeah, it was a very lackluster performance on Tuesday. And they're going to need to start blowing out teams and look impressive doing it if they want to stay where they're at, because they got Michigan State right on their heels. They got TCU on their heels, who TCU has looked great week in, week out. I mean, they really haven't been challenged all year. So, I mean, they really need to watch the backside because they got teams creeping up on them.
And you got Missouri as well, Kenny. I mean, I don't know if how long these teams are going to stay undefeated. I mean, I don't think anybody would be surprised if Missouri lost at Nebraska or if Michigan State lost at Iowa. But if either one of those teams win this week, you never know. I mean, I to me, it would be hard to believe that a undefeated team from the Big Ten or the Big 12 wouldn't ultimately trump Boise at the end.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. You know, everyone's made a big fuss about the soft schedule that Boise State plays, and it's very true. I mean, they really have nothing on their schedule that causes any problems to them for the rest of the season. I mean, they have Nevada coming up, but outside of that, I mean, it's pretty much a cakewalk. So you can pretty much chalk them down for another undefeated season. And we've seen them get snubbed the past couple years for the national championship game, and I don't think that changes this year, even if they go undefeated. All the other undefeated teams look the part. And like I said before, right now, Boise State just looks like a mediocre, unbeaten team.
All right, let's talk about the remaining of the schedule. Now, it's definitely not a murderer's row, Kenny, but I think, you know, looking forward, the games are a little bit tougher. The next game is Hawaii at home. They play at Idaho. They play Fresno State at home, and they go at Nevada. So in Hawaii, Fresno State, and Nevada, we have three of your top 10 BCS Buster teams. You do the rankings every week in College Football Insiders. And, you know, folks, if you're listening and you don't get College Football Insiders newsletter, Go to NFLDraftBible.com now. Sign up, become an All Access Football member. And Kenny does our BCS Buster page each week, and he ranks the top 10 BCS Buster schools. So you have three teams in the top 10. That is better than beating, you know, let's say their last four games, which were New Mexico State, Toledo, San Jose State, and Louisiana Tech. If there is a game there that does scare you a little bit, which team here could potentially knock off Boise State and ruin that undefeated season?
You know, actually, I would say it's Nevada, but I like the way Hawaii's playing right now. You know, that spread offense could cause problems for them. Their secondary just hasn't looked great in the past couple weeks. I mean, granted, they've played, you know, subpar teams, nothing that's obviously going to be, you know, putting up a whole bunch of points on them. But they just haven't looked good. And, I mean, they got wide receivers that can beat these guys deep. Jerron Johnson's really the guy to look for to try to make a play back there, but, I mean, he can't cover the entire field. So I think it would be Hawaii at home. Yes, I know Boise State is pretty much unbeatable on the blue turf, but, I mean, it's going to be a pretty tough game for them this week.
Yeah, that's next Saturday, November 6th, when they play host to Hawaii, obviously with a weird schedule. Their game this week for week 9 was actually on Tuesday. We already had that game. So that game was on ESPN this week. And, Kenny, as you mentioned, 49-20. A little, even though a 29-point victory, a little bit of a lackluster victory. Now, Kenny, you touched upon it a little bit. So you don't think if they run the table, let's say Michigan State loses, right? Let's say Missouri loses. Let's say, you know, Oregon loses. Let's say these teams lose. Because deep down, I really think they will. I think both Michigan State and Missouri are going down this week. And as I read on the top of the show, Auburn's got three or four tough games that are losable games. I'm not sure right now which specific game they will lose, but I think they're going to drop at least one game, maybe even two games out of their remaining schedule. What if Boise is, in fact, the only remaining undefeated team? You know, or let's say Auburn remains undefeated, but that would mean that Alabama has a second loss. Do you think Boise still gets snubbed, or do they go in ahead of a one-loss, you know, Oklahoma, a one-loss Wisconsin, let's say?
I believe that is the only scenario in which Boise State will get in. They need everyone behind them, like you said, Missouri, Michigan State, to lose. It would be nice if they could see TCU lose, too, because, like I said, TCU does play a tougher schedule than they do. And they're undefeated as well. And like I said, they've looked a lot more impressive than Boise State has. But, you know, the computers, you never know what they're going to come up with. I mean, everyone thought Boise State would be the top team the first week the BCS Buster rankings came out, but they weren't. You know, so no one really can predict that. But, yeah, Auburn does play their last game on the 26th of November at Alabama. I believe they will lose that game. And if that is the case, and it just happens to be them in one undefeated standing, I believe they do finally reach the promised land.
Yeah, I see it happening right now. I was steadfast from the start of the year. I did not think they would make it. You know, obviously I had my preseason number 2, Oklahoma. They were still undefeated. So I thought they still had a chance to run the table, and I thought if they did, they would make it all the way. Obviously, already being number 1 in the BCS, they would have had they continued to win. But they got upset last week. We've seen a lot of crazy upsets, and the way I see things playing out, I see Alabama running the table. I agree with you. I see them beating Auburn and winning the SEC title, and I see a 12-1 Alabama team squaring up against a 12-0 Boise State team in the BCS championship. I mean, do you think that's realistic right now?
I do. I really do. You know, and I honestly believe that Oregon, the way USC has been playing, Matt Barkley is one of the hottest quarterbacks in college football right now. They might slip up this week at USC. And they also have to play Arizona on November 26th, too. I mean, granted, that game's at home, and it's hard to win at Autzen Stadium. But, you know, I think Oregon will slip up, like you said. And if that is the case, then, yes, I see Alabama leapfrogging everybody. You know, I think their loss came, you know, towards the middle of the season, which is usually better. We've seen that in years past. It's better to lose early and then run the table than it is to win all your games in the beginning and lose late, because then that gives that fall, makes you fall back in the standings, and it seems like you don't have a chance to recover. So, you know, I agree with you. I believe at the end it will be Alabama versus Boise State in the national championship game, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, and Alabama still, you know, they got that loss, but, you know, they still, this is what they have left. They got a trip. They're off this week. They have a trip at LSU. They play host to a ranked Mississippi State team, and they play potentially undefeated number one Auburn before they play potentially South Carolina in a rematch. So, you know, they have a chance to really build up that resume and tack on some more impressive wins to what they've done so far this season. So I think that's what Alabama has in front of them. And, you know, at this point, when you have a – see, when you're undefeated, you want an easy schedule in front of you. When you have a loss, you want some tough games there, because then that's how you impress the pollsters, that's how you impress the computers, and that's how you move up. So I definitely think that's a potential game there, and that's my lean. Obviously, the way this college football season has been going, you know, your prediction for the BCS championship game could change almost on a weekly basis. So let's see how, you know, next week pans out when these teams hit the field again. But, Kenny, you've been bringing up TCU a couple of times here, and that's really an interesting question. Why not TCU? Why is all the love going on Boise's side? Do you think this is a little bit of, well, last year everybody thought TCU was the better team and Boise beat them when they went head-to-head in the bowl game, so now it seems like Boise got that edge over TCU, and you know, they're going to get the nod in terms of being that BCS buster team?
I really do. You know, as much as they try not to play on it, you know, from years past, I really think it is. And, you know, the last time I was on, I mentioned that, you know, they brought back all their starters but one, Kyle Wilson. You know, it's hard to kind of look away from that. And the fact that they have gone undefeated for, you know, numerous seasons and has had success over the past 4 or 5 years, that weighs in on it too. I mean, TCU's had its success, but it hasn't been to the level of Boise State. And I think that's what's kind of snubbing TCU out of the talks right now. And they're kind of that, you know, lay low in the weeds, fly under the radar. I mean, they TCU about them, what's funny about them is they're number one in the nation in defense. And they're also 10th in the nation in rushing. You know what that reminds me of? A Big Ten school. You know, they pride themselves on running the ball, controlling the clock, and playing hard-nosed defense. Yet they're still not getting love, kind of like Ohio State never gets love anymore because they've lost so many national championship games. And it just seems like Big Ten burns out in every bowl game that they're in. You know, I think it does come from the seasons past. And it does, you know, lie heavily on the fact that they did lose to Boise State last year in the Fiesta Bowl. But, you know, you can't count TCU out. You just can't. I mean, you know, like you said, the computers are a funny thing. And, you know, maybe some by some grace of God for TCU, they could, you know, leapfrog somebody towards the end of the year and maybe get a shot at the national title. But I just don't see it happening.
It kind of, you know, you mentioned it sounds like a Big Ten team. It sounds a little like Alabama, too. You know, bring a big-time defense. Have a two-headed backfield with some physical running backs who like to between the tackles. I think Dalton and McElroy are kind of similar quarterbacks. You don't want – they're not going to carry the team. They're not going to lead the way. You don't want them dropping back, throwing the ball 30, 40 times a game. But they're very good, kind of rolling out, little play action, playing off the running game. They can make some big plays that way. I think, you know, it's an interesting matchup, and I think they kind of have a similar style there.
Yeah, they definitely do. You know, and Andy Dalton and McElroy, you know, neither one of them, like you said, are going to impress you with, you know, big playmaking ability or anything like that. It's just the timeliness of their playmaking ability is what really gets, you know, catches the eye of everyone around the country, really. I mean, Andy Dalton's completing 65% of his passes. You know, he's only thrown 5 interceptions, has 14 touchdowns. And, you know, Ed Wesley, that running game's, he's having a career year. You know, he's averaging 7 yards per carry. I mean, anytime you can average 7 yards per carry, it doesn't matter who you're facing or what conference you're in. That's impressive. So, yeah, I mean, they do mirror themselves. And, you know, like I said, it's all about quarterback play in college football. I mean, you're not going to get it done with a mediocre quarterback, but you don't need a flashy quarterback either. And, you know, Ohio State's done that for years. I mean, when's the last time you heard of a Ohio State quarterback even going to the NFL and having success. I mean, you got Troy Smith getting the start for the 49ers this week, but other than that, you know, you don't really have much going on there. But, you know, both teams, you know, have great offenses, and they like to control the clock, and that'll win a lot of ball games for you.
All right, Kenny, before we let you go, I got to ask you about another team there in a big game this weekend in terms of the BCS Buster Schools. You know, if TCU is flying underneath the radar with Boise getting all the attention, then Utah is off the radar completely. And they play host to TCU in a couple weeks, November 6th. TCU's got to go to Utah. Now, I remember 2 years ago when both of these teams were undefeated and TCU was considered the better team, they had to go into Utah, and they fell. The Utes beat them behind Brian Johnson, who's now coaching there at Utah. What are your thoughts on Utah and their game this week against Air Force? Will Utah stay undefeated?
I think they will. You know, TCU kind of laid the blueprint down for them by putting the smackdown on them this last week. You know, all you have to do is really stop their running game. I know it's easier said than done, but Utah does rank third in the nation in defense. You know, they're only allowing just under, you know, 13 points per game. I think they'll have the ability to stop them. Jordan Wynn's been just playing lights out this year. The sophomore quarterback, as you know, he's just been playing great. And I think their offense has enough firepower to get it done. Air Force is kind of weak in the secondary, too, so I think he'll be able to throw all over them. And it does help, you know, that they do play at home. That's obviously going to give them the leg up in the competition, too. But, yeah, I think they stay undefeated.
All right, Kenny, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time talking some BCS Busters. Hopefully we can have you on again and talk a little bit more about how Boise, TCU, and Utah are doing this season.
Oh, and just one, I just wanted to add one more thing for, you know, any Utah fan that may be listening and griping about, you know, their standings and why they're not ranked higher. The only thing I can say is that they've only beaten one team with a winning record to date so far, and that was their first game of the season against Pitt, and they had to go to overtime to beat them. So they got their tough schedule coming up. If they can beat Air Force, beat TCU at home, beat Notre Dame, San Diego State, and BYU, you know, then you can start the griping. But until that happens, you know, they're going to have to be happy at where they're at right now.
Yeah, fair point, Kenny, fair point. I mean, for everyone who says that these BCS teams don't get enough love, that you know, the system is geared against them, you know, would beating Pitt at home in overtime be an impressive win for any other ranked team? I don't think so. But for Utah, it's considered a good win. You know, if Michigan State beat Pitt at home, or if Wisconsin beat Pitt at home, or Arkansas beat Pitt at home in overtime, that would not be considered a good performance at all. All right, Kenny, thanks a lot for pointing that out. And, again, we'll talk to you again later in the year.
All right, have a good one, Dan.
Thanks, Kenny. And that leads us right into our man, our super scout, or our draft guru. I forget which one he is now. I think he's our draft guru. And that is Justin Van Fulton. Justin, how's it going today?
Oh, man.
So, Justin, let's dive right into this game. Missouri against Nebraska. We both thought OU would win last week, and Missouri really took it to them at every level there. Not only did Lane Gabbert perform well in that second half when Missouri pulled away, but their defense really, really stepped up, and, you know, Landry Jones just looked like a deer in headlights in that fourth quarter. Now, this week they travel to Nebraska, got to go on the road, and now, you know, another big test for Blaine Gabbert, going against a Nebraska defense, which has been significantly better than Oklahoma's so far this year. How do you see that matching up this week?
Well, I think you look at it, and you had mentioned, you know, as far as, you know, Gabbert, his success he had against Oklahoma, but Oklahoma doesn't have a Prince on their, you know, as far as in their defensive backfield like Nebraska does. I mean, as far as Prince Akimura is a guy who's going to be a top 10 type pick there, a shutdown corner. I mean, some people think that he'll be drafted ahead of Patrick Peterson there, the LSU junior. But I mean, he did get beat a couple times against Justin Blackmon of Oklahoma State last week. But I think, you know, as far as Missouri doesn't have a Blackmon type receiver on their roster to be able to do that. So, well, I don't see, as far as, you know, the passing attack really having the effect that it did against Oklahoma. You know, so when I look at this game, I think, you know, Missouri's not going to stay undefeated. They're going to lose there in Nebraska. And as far as, you know, Nebraska's going to try to get some of their momentum back and get their push after they had that loss against Texas.
Yeah, it's definitely a very, very different Matt breakdown and defense they're going up against. I mean, Nebraska is second in the Big 12 in pass defense. They're giving up 140 yards a game, 5.3 per attempt, only a 48.1 completion percentage against, and they got 12 interceptions. Oklahoma's eighth, giving up 239 yards, 7.1 yards per pass, and a 57 completion percentage. And I did a big piece on Gabbard that's on the website, kind of giving my analysis, and I broke down every throw and run he had in the game. And while they did throw it a little more down the field in the second half, you know, in the first half he was only 1-for-4 passing when the ball actually traveled more than 10 yards down the line, you know, past the line of scrimmage. He did a much better job in the second half, but still for the entire game, only one pass traveled more than 20 yards down the line of scrimmage. I don't think you can make a living against the Nebraska defense if you're playing in that small space. You know what I mean? And another test, too, is that offensive line. That, I think that's what stunned me the most, is really Gabbard was not he was not sacked, and he was rarely pressured. They really dominated that Oklahoma offensive line. Let's see if they can do it again. So you're basically in agreement with me, Justin, here. Missouri's undefeated run ends this week.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's, you know, as far as you mentioned, a you know, great point, as far as Nebraska's got a pretty good defensive line, you know, and, you know, Oklahoma did too, but, you know, I think the standpoint is, you know, we're going to see some push up in the middle and he'll get some pressure in his face where the defensive tackles, they didn't have those defensive tackles like they do there in Nebraska. So, yeah, I think Mizzou goes down this week.
And the one time he did get pressured and he rolled out, now, he for a guy that's 6'5", he's pretty impressive. He can move pretty well. He's not, you know, he's not the running quarterback that a Newton is or a Pryor is, but for a pocket passer that size, he can scramble a little bit. But when he was pressured one time and tried to throw on the move, the ball was knocked away and could have been picked, and he had another ball that was dropped by a safety. So, you know, those are potential interceptions that could have been out there that didn't happen. Before we head to the round table, Justin, I want to talk to you about another undefeated team, Auburn, going to Ole Miss. And Cameron Newton, as far as his Heisman hopes and NFL hopes, I know we talked a little bit about this last week, but I was shocked to see that another scouting service, not NFL Draft Bible, but another scouting service, had him rated as the number one junior pro prospect ahead of Ryan Mallett. What are your thoughts on Newton in terms of his Heisman campaign and his pro potential?
So I think right now, hands down, he, you know, if we had the voting right now, he'd win the Heisman. He's just been that impressive, and I expect his run to the Heisman Trophy win, you know, winning to continue. And I think eventually he will be the Heisman Trophy winner there in New York, because I really like what Auburn's been able to do, and they only have one loss, and with the stats he's putting up, it's going to be very impressive, especially running football. Now on the flip side, as far as I've heard from multiple sources that Cameron Newton will declare early and come out for the 2011 NFL draft, but to my opinion, that's a mistake. He's not ready. He's a physical, you know, freak. 6'6", 250, can run. He's got a strong arm, but he needs to get more of those nuances down. It's going to take him a while. I would like to see him come back for his senior season and really kind of develop and really kind of, you know, hone in those passing skills. So when he does make that jump in the 2012 draft, he could possibly be, you know, a first-round pick. I think if he comes out early, which all indications that I'm hearing, he will declare early, and, you know, he's got some people in his ear who are telling him, hey, he could be a first-round pick and stuff like that. I don't think that's going to happen. I think if he comes out early, he's probably going to be a second or, you know, second-round pick and not be the type of quarterback he could be if he does, you know, come back as to Auburn for his senior season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, last week, from a college player perspective, last week was an unbelievable performance by Cam Newton. But let's be honest, if an NFL team is scouting that game, they're more worried about the fact that he only threw for 86 yards on 10 of 16 passing, not the fact that he ran for 217, because that's not going to happen at the next level. That's not how the game is played at the next level. And, you know, it's going to be fun, because I think it's going to be another Tim Tebow-esque type debate, you know, Pat White type debate. Where's Pat White now? I think he might be playing winter ball in the Dominican for you know, trying to get ready for Kansas City next year, not in the NFL. So you got to be careful. You know, being a great college quarterback, being a pro guy is not the same thing. And I bring up Tebow because he reminds me a lot of Tebow. I wrote this when, you know, I wrote about him after the Mississippi State game. He reminds me of a bigger, stronger, faster Tim Tebow in that he can, you know, you rarely see quarterbacks run like a fullback and run people over. But as we saw, he was able to kind of, you know, he didn't completely run away from Patrick Peterson, but Peterson wasn't able to catch him last week when he scored one of those touchdowns, which was amazingly impressive. Quickly, Justin, before we bring Kelron on, does number one go down for a fourth week in a row?
I think the standpoint, he, you know, as far as they don't, Auburn stays undefeated.
All right. Now it's time for the roundtable, and we will bring on our super scout, Kelron Sykes, to join our draft guru, Justin Van Fulpen. Kelron, how's it going? Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. How's everything going?
Pretty good, buddy. Pretty good. So let's start back there with these undefeated teams. You know, the last 3 weeks, it's been amazing. So many teams have gone down. We saw Alabama get upset by South Carolina. Wisconsin took it to Ohio State. And last week it was Missouri beating Oklahoma. And the four big games this week involving undefeated teams are Auburn and Ole Miss that we just spoke about, Missouri and Nebraska, who we also talked about, as well as Oregon playing USC, and Michigan State going to Iowa, Kinnick Stadium, to take on the Hawkeyes. Kelron, let's start with you. Which, if any, of these undefeated teams will lose this week?
I think we're looking at a trend that's going to continue to happen for, you know, the third or fourth consecutive week. I definitely think Oregon goes down to SC and loses. Oregon's coming off, USC's coming off a bye week, and those guys just seem to lather up, so to speak, in terms of buying into the system with Lane Kiffin. And I really think they're going to be really dominant in terms of their run game versus Oregon. Nobody really hasn't really pressured Oregon in terms of running the ball against them. So I think SC definitely is going to beat Oregon this week, as well as Missouri. Missouri going to Nebraska, that's going to be a tough place to play in the Big Red Sea down there in Lincoln. And I don't know if Missouri can match up with the athletic ability in terms schematically, defensively, what Nebraska has. And also I think Michigan possibly goes down this week to Iowa as well.
You got Auburn as the only one staying undefeated after this week. How about you, Justin? You already said Mizzou's going down. Anyone else going down among this group of undefeated?
You know, it could possibly be Michigan State, you know, as far as going there to Iowa. That's a tough place to play. So as far as I think Mizzou's going down, and if I had, you know, as far as had the lean, I would say probably, you know, Michigan State could, but I wouldn't, you know, guarantee it. I'm going to guarantee Mizzou goes down this week. That's the only
one.
I think Oregon and Auburn stay undefeated.
So the number one, the two number ones. Yes, for the people that hate the BCS, at least the BCS gives you an extra number one for a potential upset and more drama. You know what I mean? So, Justin, let's stay with you. Stock up. Who kind of stood out to you last week? Which player improved their stock with their performance a week ago?
Well, I mean, we all can say, you know, as far as Nick Fairley, the defensive tackle from Auburn, really rose up. And that wasn't one of the top defensive tackles, I think, as far as his performance against, you know, LSU, really cemented himself as a first-round pick and probably a top 15 pick. And from, you know, like all indications I've heard, he's a guy who's going to declare early. And really his stock is really ticking up, and it's shooting up fast. So NFL teams like him, you know, as far as, and he could go even higher, but I think right now he's in that 15 to 20 type range in that first round. So I really like what he's done, and he really had a great game against LSU on that, you know, undefeated type stage.
So you got, in other words, my guy you're going with.
Yeah, you know, hey, smart guys think alike.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to check out the site, go to that Scouts Notebook homepage. Nick Fairley, his coming out show was against Mississippi State that Thursday night. Also, go to College Football Insiders Radio, a Q&A interview I did with Fairley that week talking about his performance and breaking out. Definitely, I agree with you, Justin. I don't see how this kid comes back to school, defensive tackle. His stock seems to be on the rise every week. He's just a beast. How about you, Kelron? Which guy do you improve his stock the most last week?
You know, watching the Arkansas game, I'm really in love with Greg Childs. You know, at 6, he plays bigger than at 220 and 6'3". He's definitely a vertical threat in terms of running vertical routes, but he has such great body control in his intermediate and short routes, and he's so big to tackle in terms of bringing him down one-on-one. I really think, you know, he's elevated his stock as probably being the second or third best junior receiver right now out there for the 2011 draft. So I definitely think Greg is really moved up in the charts.
All right, interesting. That's definitely high praise there. That's a very impressive junior group, a group that includes A.J. Green, Julio Jones, Jonathan Baldwin, Ryan Broyles. So definitely Greg Childs is somebody to keep an eye on from Arkansas. Ryan Mallett's number one target. All right, finally, tonight, Florida State against North Carolina State. Kelron, prospect watch, who should we keep an eye on?
Well, I think Rodney Hudson still is the number one offensive guard in the country. Obviously, we know Christian Ponder, you know, his stock is improved in terms of his, you know, going through his progressions and limiting turnovers and managing the offense. But I think Rodney Hudson is still the guy that's obviously all the NFL guys have their eyes on in terms of, you know, being the number one guard or possibly number one overall lineman taken in the draft coming up next year.
All right, interesting. Rodney Hudson, keep your eye on that offensive line. It's a stellar offensive line all across. All five guys are returning starters. Justin, how about you? Who to watch tonight? Prospect watch for Florida State, NC State.
I think you got to go to Christian Ponder, the quarterback there for Florida State. He came off last year with a shoulder injury, had shoulder surgery. You know, now he's got a bursa sack, you know, as far as issue there in the elbow. You know, he's had some issues as far as really pushing that football down the field. We know he's a great athlete. We know he's got some, you know, as far as, but he's got to really show he's still got that arm strength. And you know, there are some rumors and some talk that he's not as healthy as you know, as people think, and that he's really just being, you know, as far as a tough guy and really going out there and just trying to help, you know, will Florida State to an ACC title. So, you know, we need to keep our eye on as far as the health level of Christian Ponder and really see, hey, are we seeing the true Christian Ponder, or is he kind of banged up, and can this guy be even a better player than what we see, you know, what we see in this senior season?
Yeah, definitely coming off his worst performance of the year 2 weeks ago at home against Boston College. A couple of his turnovers kept the Eagles in the game. Justin, let me ask you a question before we get you off the air. You know, he had injury issues last year, cut his season short. He's not the biggest kid. Is durability now going to become an issue with Ponder?
Well, I think you always look at that when you know, first quarterbacks. I mean, that was the you know, knock on Sam Bradford as far as with the shoulder injuries. That's the knock on Matthew Stafford with the Detroit Lions when he's had a couple injuries. But I think the standpoint is he's a tough kid. He wants to play. If he can play healthy, we've seen as far as a shoulder injury what Drew Brees was able to come back. But so I don't think people are going to want to see those MRIs and stuff like that to combine and get those medical tests. But if he, you know, shows out medically fine, you know, he's going to be okay.
All right, Justin, thanks a lot. We're looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right, now with Justin Van Fulpen, our draft guru. We're staying with our Super Scout, Kelron Sykes, here on College Football Insiders Radio, brought to you by All Access Football. Go to NFLDraftBible.com to get all your draft, college, and NFL news, as well as subscribe to College Football Insiders, the newsletter. Become an All Access Football member now. You can also follow us at Twitter at CFB Insiders. That's at CFB Insiders. That's our College Football Insiders Twitter account. Kelron, let's start with that big game there in the Pac-10, and you talked about it. I guess you spoiled the ending a little bit in terms of your prediction with going with the upset with USC. I'm assuming you're looking at this game the same way I am. It's not necessarily going to be the defense suddenly becoming world beaters again, a top defense like USC had in the past, but USC winning in a shootout. USC's offense, it's not putting up the numbers that Oregon's offense is, but they're not that far behind either.
No, they're not. And, you know, they have a phenomenal talent in receiver Robert Woods there, and obviously we know about what, you know, Matt has done in the quarterback there at SC. But I think from a physical standpoint, nobody's physically hit Oregon in the mouth yet. A lot of teams wanted to match, you know, their intensity or their speed offensively in terms of going up and down the field with them. But I think SC's game plan is going to be, you know, we're going to line up, we're going to hit these guys in the mouth. I mean, they have a, you know, Allen Bradford is a big running back. You know, they can come in with two or three guys. And obviously Robert Woods is a home run threat. You know, Stanley Havili, the fullback. So they pose they have a plethora of talent offensively that's going to line up, and I think they're going to hit the Ducks in the mouth. Once again, we're looking at a Ducks team that's undersized. Their front eight is really undersized. I mean, we're looking at Kenny Rose, what, 230 pounds, and, you know, Josh Cadeau is about, 225 at best. So they're really undersized up front. So, you know, with that big offensive line that SC has, it's really going to be interesting to see if they can manage that clock and just line up and hit those guys in the mouth and kind of limit the scoring, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me that nobody really talks about Oregon's schedule. I think the heat Boise has taken is fair, but when you look at Oregon's schedule, they beat New Mexico, they beat Tennessee, they beat Portland State, they beat Arizona State, they beat Washington State, and last week UCLA. And I know a lot of the scores are impressive in terms of the margin of victory, but outside of the Stanford win, right now, none of these other teams look like bowl teams. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
You're
so,
right. Yes.
As impressive as their 7-0 start has been, like you said, they really have not been hit in the mouth yet. And, you know, the one team that kind of did Stanford really put it on them in the first half, obviously Oregon, all the credit in the world, tremendous adjustment. They did a great job in the second half shutting down Stanford's offense. But it is a vulnerable team, and I agree with you. I would not be surprised if USC finds a way to pull this game out behind Matt Barkley, who, as you mentioned, is quietly having a very, very good season.
Oh, very much so. Like I said, he has so much talent offensively. With the talent they have from the receiver spot to the running backs, don't be surprised. They're capable of putting up or matching Oregon, you know, in terms of points, but I don't think that would be the game plan for Saturday. Obviously, SC has more talent than, you know, previously mentioned teams that you mentioned, Portland State, Arizona State, Tennessee, but I think we're going to slow the game down and beat the Oregon Ducks, and I think SC would do that.
And it's amazing, too, because it seems like a different running back every week, right? I mean, early on, it was Mark Tyler. Then Alan Bradford came on, and it looked like he was taking over the duties. And last week, out of nowhere, you know, the forgotten man, C.J. Gable, kind of emerged.
Yeah, he did. Actually, we really forgot about him. You know, he seemed like he's been there, guy, at least 6-7 years. But once again, that just shows you the depth and the talent that SC has, where a guy like C.J. Gable, who was highly recruited, you know, under Pete Carroll, will come in there. And, you know, he shared duty with Joe McKnight last year, but he's the guy that's still a home run threat. But once again, we're talking about a plethora of talent on the SC side offensively. And once again, expect SC to go in there and dominate up front.
And you know what was fun this week too, Calron? The little bickering, the little trash talk back and forth. Speaking of the talent, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think Coach Kelly did a little research this week and told us that USC has 12 five-star recruits and I think 26 four-star recruits, while his Oregon Ducks have no five-star recruits and about 11 or 12 four-stars, to which Lane Kiffin said he wished he was a better coach. He wished he was as good a coach as Coach Kelly, so he had enough time to do that kind of research. But he said he doesn't have the time. He's too busy coaching. So you got to love the trash talk, and you got to love a little hatred between these types of rivals. So I think that puts a little juice into this game this week. Calron, before we let you go, one more big game in the Pac-10. We talked about them already a little bit, Stanford and Andrew Luck. They're going to Washington to take on the Huskies. And Jake Locker, a big game for both teams. Washington's going to have to upset somebody if they're going to make a bowl this year. What's your take on these two quarterbacks and what we will see from them on Saturday? Andrew Luck, just a redshirt sophomore. Jake Locker, obviously a fourth-year starter, a senior.
Well, obviously, Locker, though, you're talking about two guys that, you know, if Andrew decides to declare, you know, we're talking about two highly, you know, draftable guys this year. With Locker, it just seems as if he can trust his teammates. If his guys like Polk and Jermaine Kearse, you know, if those guys can make plays and not drop balls and be consistent offensively, whereas if his fourth or third and seven or second and short, you know, once Locker goes through his progressions and he sees a guy open and he decides to run, you know, he loses faith in his playmakers. If Locker can, you know, if those guys can kind of show that they're making plays and they're involved in the game, I think Washington can come out, you know, with the victory this week. Now, obviously, Stanford has, you know, the Wusu kid at receiver, and Luck is a tremendous player, and their fullback there that goes both ways. You know, those guys, you know, they bring a hell of a game plan coming up to Washington this weekend. But once again, it's about what team can eliminate the turnovers, what team can obviously make the big plays. And, you know, we know Luck is going to stretch the field, you know, offensively. But once again, if Locker can trust his teammates and those guys can kind of follow him in terms of making plays, I think Washington pulls out this victory. And, you know, we're talking about a team that possibly is looking for a bowl bid right now. So it's going to be interesting to see Saturday.
All right, Calron, thanks a lot for joining us, and we look forward to having you again on our roundtable and as well as breaking down the Pac-10. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Good deal. Thank you.
All right, as he mentioned, you know, this is a Washington team fighting for a bowl bid. They lost last week to Arizona. They're 3-4 now, and coming up, they have Stanford, as we know, at home, followed by a trip to Oregon, UCLA at home, and then two road games at Cal at Washington. So unless they want to put themselves in a situation where they have to win the last three, including a Cal team that's very good at home. I know they're not as good overall as Stanford, but their Cal is very good at home. They're going to have to upset somebody, and it may have to be Stanford. Otherwise, Locker could be a John Elway, you know, the connection to Stanford. John Elway, number one overall pick, who never played in a bowl game during his time at Stanford. Locker could be headed in that direction. Unfortunately, he's not 100%. He's expected to go, but he's got a little bit of a thigh bruise and some sore ribs. But so we'll see how he pans out this week. It will be obviously a shock if he doesn't play. He is expected to go, but he will not be playing at 100%. And for the Husky fans out there, don't forget, go to NFLDraftBible.com. We have an interview from this week on location after practice in Pullman with senior safety Nate Williams. Last week we spoke to Mason Foster, so you can go to NFLDraftBible.com right now and check out both of those on-location interviews. But right now we're going to bring on our man, Reverend Ralph Mancini from NFL Draft Bible, Fantasy Football Insider as well. Reverend, thanks a lot for joining us. How's it going?
Hey, what's up, Dan? I'm saying a couple of Hail Marys for my Nittany Lions this weekend.
I think they may need them. But we're going to get to that game in a couple minutes. But first, let's break down the big game of the week in the Big Ten, and that involves Michigan State at Iowa going to Kinnick Stadium. And two key forces in this game, one on each side. They'll be on the field at the same time. Let's start with your man, quarterback Kirk Cousins. And, folks, if you do go to NFL Draft Bible, after you check out those, you know, Q&As, on-location Q&As from Washington, or before you check them out, check out Ralph's article, The Maturation of Mr. Kirk Cousins. Talk a little bit about this junior quarterback who obviously hasn't been getting the hype that, you know, a Pryor or Robinson have this year.
Yeah, well, Kirk Cousins, he looks like almost a different player this year. He's making better decisions. And, you know, we all know that, in my opinion, he's already the best play-action quarterback in the Big Ten. Very intelligent. Is not taking a lot of bad chances, a lot of bad risks in games. As a matter of fact, over his past three games, he hasn't thrown an interception. So, I mean, here's a kid that, you know, is very smart, very cerebral. He realized what it takes now to win ball games. It's not always about, you know, making the big throw. It's about not making the bad play. But, you know, when they've needed him, he has been able to make big plays as well. He's got a nice receiver core right now. And this kid's coming along. And to me, I mean, when I watch him, he just keeps getting better and better every week.
And he is coming off his best performance of the year, 331 yards, a season high, the first time he went over 300. He threw 290 against Northern Colorado early in the season, and also three touchdowns to no interceptions. He also threw three touchdowns in their upset at home against Wisconsin, but was picked off twice in that game. So 331 yards, three touchdowns, zero picks in their come-from-behind victory over Northwestern last week on the road when they were trailing 17-0 in that ball game. Now, on the other side of the ball, Rev, a guy we both like a lot, Adrian Claiborne, defensive end from Iowa, a big kid, had a pretty good game last week against Wisconsin. I thought, you know, against the run, Gabe Kiremi handled him pretty well. I saw him get blocked one-on-one. I saw him get stunted and knocked back, which you don't see very often. And the reason I bring this up is because Claiborne isn't, you know, that edge pass rusher that a Robert Quinn is. He's more of a guy that could do it both ways, and we expect him to be elite against the run in the pass, but he did give Creamy a lot of trouble with his quickness off the edge, and he really does move very well for a big kid. Rev, before I, you know, let me just say what I think of Claiborne first, and, you know, I still think he's definitely a first-round pick. I would still give him a top 10 grade, but being honest, I haven't seen him play consistently at that top 10 level this year like I did last year. What are your thoughts on his senior season so far?
Well, let's not forget, you know, Adrian Claiborne has seen his fair share of double and even triple teams this year. And to me, I mean, this guy, when it counts the most, this guy's been really, really dominant. I've seen him, like, almost single-handedly almost win games for Iowa, and you don't see that a lot out of the defensive end position. Now, you know, a lot of people, they're prognosticating, they're making out their draft list, and, you know, as far as who's going to go where. And a lot of people have Robert Quinn in front of Adrian Claiborne, and as good as Quinn is, and as much as you know, and as much athletic ability as he has, I mean, I haven't seen the production from Quinn that I've seen from Adrian Claiborne. In my opinion, Claiborne is the best defender, period, in college today. So, I mean, if I were a team and I were drafting and I was looking for a defensive end, I mean, my first choice would be Adrian Claiborne.
So would you be concerned at all in terms of his drop in numbers and statistics? I know numbers don't tell the entire story, but, you know, when he's coming off the year with double-digit sacks, 20 tackles for a loss, he's not even close to those numbers this year.
Yeah, but, you know, that's also because of, you know, the attention that they're giving him. And also, he's coming very close to getting sacks. And he's got other guys on the line that a lot of times they're beating him to the quarterback. So, you know, he's on a very talented defensive line. And the one thing that I look at with Adrian Claiborne that I think makes him an unstoppable force is his motor. I mean, this guy just keeps going and keeps getting better and better as the game wears on. This guy has just an enormous amount of energy that not many offensive linemen can match. So that's the one thing that I look at with Adrian Claiborne. He just plays hard. He goes at 100 miles an hour from the first minute all the way through the end of the game.
Yeah, he definitely does play hard, and he does have a motor, and he doesn't give up on plays. He stays on plays. He'll make plays on the perimeter. He'll scrape down the line of scrimmage and make a play. You know, when he's lined up at right defensive end, he'll end up making a play on the left side, moving down the line of scrimmage. So he's definitely an all-out player. I know that's something that you love a lot, Rev, and that's something that NFL coaches will love a lot as well. Go to NFLDraftBible.com, and you can check out our Scouting the Nation breakdown of the Wisconsin offensive line against the Iowa talented defensive line. Another big stud they have there is Christian Ballard, and our scouts notebook breaking down players on both teams from last week's performance. Rev, back to this game here. Iowa, you know, they gave up 31 points last week against Wisconsin, 21 after halftime. You know, coming into that game, they had only given up two rushing touchdowns. Actually, going into the second half, they had given up two rushing touchdowns all season, and they gave up three in the second half against Wisconsin. Are they going to be a fiery bunch this week, or does Michigan State remain undefeated?
You know, the one thing that concerns me about Michigan State is their offensive line. You know, if you've watched them over the past 2 or 3 weeks, there have been a number of breakdowns in that offensive line. And, you know, the one guy that worries me the most is the left tackle, DJ Young. He did get banged up some last week. He came back into the game, so he should be ready to go this week. But again, I mean, I watched them against Illinois, against a guy like Clay Nurse, who isn't nearly as good as Adrian Claiborne, and Nurse is beating him off the edge. So you can just imagine what Claiborne is going to do to him. So that's a big concern to me. I think if Michigan State wants to win this game, they're going to have to develop their screen game. They need to get the ball out of Kirk Cousins' hands quickly and just try to move the chains with the controlled passing game because, I mean, how is Michigan State going to adjust when they start rushing five and they start stunting those defensive linemen? You know, I think man for man, I think Iowa's defensive line is way better than Michigan State's offensive line. So they better come out with a good plan and get that ball out of Kirk Cousins' hands quickly, immediately, or else this could be a long ball game for the Spartans.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought last week Wisconsin's offensive line as a whole may have gotten the better of Iowa, and they even said so afterwards. A lot of the Iowa defenders put the loss on them, giving up that many points. They're not used to giving up 31. When they gave up 34 against Arizona, that included a kickoff return for a touchdown, an interception return for a touchdown, and a blocked punt that set up the Wildcats inside the 10-yard line. So that was basically 21 points that really had little to do with the defense, and in some cases nothing to do with the defense. Last week, Iowa really, they had four long drives, and they're not used to giving up those kind of drives, and I think the Hawkeyes are going to be supremely motivated, and I believe they will knock off Michigan State. Rev, you mentioned it earlier, your Penn State Nittany Lions, they're playing host to Michigan. Both teams need a win here. You know what I mean? Neither team is really headed in the right direction. Obviously, Michigan is back in the polls, but they're still coming off back-to-back losses. Now you can chalk them up and say, hey, we lost to Iowa, we lost to Michigan State, we lost to quality teams, top 20 teams. But if that's the case, that means you're going to have to respond and show up against Penn State this week. Before I ask you for your pick, Denard Robinson is supposed to be 100%. How do you see him faring in this game on the road in Happy Valley?
Well, the problem for Penn State this week is they're dealing with a lot of injuries. You know, not only do they have injuries on the offense, but they have some key defenders that are going to be missing this game, both in the secondary and on the defensive line. You know, one of the guys, Jack Crawford, he's doubtful. It looks like he's not going to be ready to go. So I think the way Penn State stops Denard Robinson is just to move the ball on offense and keep Denard Robinson off the field. That's the way they're going to win this game. I think that they're going to need to put up some points. I think this could potentially be a very high-scoring ball game between the two teams because, quite frankly, you know, as much as, you know, we criticize that Penn State defense, Michigan State's defense is not all that good either. And this is a Michigan defense that can be beaten in the secondary. They have some poor defensive backs this year, not playing very well. And, you know, the one question mark Penn State has on offense is their quarterback. You know, true freshman Robert Bolden is going to be out. He suffered a concussion last week. So enter Matthew McGlowan, who is not as athletic as Bolden, but the guy's got an attitude about him. You know, he brings a lot of confidence to the team. You know, guys like, you know, guard Stefan Wisniewski was actually very excited, you know, having McGlowan in the lineup this week. So I think he could provide a little bit of a spark. So I do give Penn State a chance to win this ball game. And, you know, let's not forget, you know, Derek Moy is a guy who's been picking it up lately. He's got three touchdowns in his past two games. And then Evan Royster, he only needs 31 yards this week to become Penn State's all-time leading rusher, surpassing Kurt Warner. So I think if Penn State plays this right, they hold on to the ball, move the chains, and win the time of possession battle, I think Penn State has a chance here.
That's the original Kurt Warner there who set that record there. So what's your pick, Rev? Don't give me they got a chance. Are the Penn State
I'm calling for an upset here. You know, I'm calling for an upset, and I think that they're going to get that running game going. I think Evan Royster is going to be plenty motivated to get that record. They're playing at home, which is certainly an advantage. And I look for Penn State to win this probably by a field goal.
I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go Michigan. I agree it could be a close game, but I just look at the teams that Penn State has beaten, Youngstown State, Kent State, Temple, Minnesota. I'm not saying Michigan is at the level of an Alabama or an Iowa, but Illinois, they're probably better than Illinois, and Illinois really took it to Penn State and Happy Valley. So I'm going to go with Michigan. As you mentioned, one of those reasons is the injury issues. Not only is Jack Crawford expected to miss the game, but also on the line, Eric Lattimore is already out with the wrist injury. They've already lost Nick Suki, the free safety, with the pectoral injury. He's out for the year. So it is a banged-up defense there. But this is a kind of a make-or-break game for both programs. This could dictate which direction these teams go. So definitely a must-watch this Saturday on ESPN. Rev, you know, I was going to ask you about Ohio State, Minnesota, but I think the most interesting question about that game is why is it on ABC at 8 o'clock? I don't know. I don't think anybody can really answer that for me. But let's just skip that one and say, let's jump ahead to who do you think is going to win the Big Ten this year? If Michigan State loses, it kind of opens things up for everybody. Michigan State, Iowa, Ohio State, and Wisconsin are all in the mix.
Yeah, I think if Iowa wins this week, as you know, we both anticipate them doing, I think what that does is it makes that November 20th showdown between Iowa and Ohio State a very, very key matchup. And that game may indeed determine who is going to come out of that conference. And I think the big advantage is going to be that Iowa will be playing at home in that game versus Ohio State. So I'm going to be predicting, I will predict that Iowa is going to come out on top in the Big Ten. If they do beat Michigan State like we expect them to, and then they do beat Ohio State at home at Kinnick Stadium, I look for Iowa to win this Big Ten.
All right, we have 5 seconds left. I'm with you. I've been on the Hawkeyes bandwagon since last September. I'm not jumping off just yet.